Welcome everyone to another session of Soul Maintenance with the Spirits Janitor. I'm Martin Flynn, and today we're unlocking the door to a room most of us would rather pretend doesn't exist. That is the dreaded feeling of shame, a word that for a lot of people tightens the chest, that old ghost that lingers, the voice behind the curtain whispering, "You are not enough. You are too much. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't be you," which is all bullshit. But today we don't run away from shame. We invite it in for tea. We look it in the eye and we ask it, what is it guarding? Because shame isn't just the problem. Sometimes it's the lock. Sometimes it's also the key. So what is shame? Shame is different things to a lot of people, but in my experience of my experiencing of it and my experience of working with people who experience it, shame is, it's not guilt. First of all, we have to be straight with that. Guilt says, "I did something bad," in inverted commas. Shame says, "I am bad." There's a world of a difference between the two. I think guilt can guide us back to whatever our values are. Shame, though, shame wants exile. It wants us to exile ourselves from everyone, from the world, from everything. It's older than reason. It's a body memory. It lives in the skin, the shoulders, the clenching stomach. It hides under perfectionism, procrastination. It hides under rage, control, or collapse. James Hillman might say, shame is our diamond or our inner spirit, neither good nor bad, but very powerful. Misunderstood, shadowed. In Celtic myth, when the warrior returned from battle, they would not speak for days. Not from pride or secrecy, but from the weight of their soul. They waited for the bards to sing the truth of their actions. They waited to be seen. Shame is the weight we carry in our souls when we haven't been witnessed truthfully. When we think of our worst moment, when we think our worst moment is our essence, or when we think our worst moment is us. Where does shame live? Well, shame takes root in silence, in childhoods where emotions were punished, our bodies ridiculed, in classrooms where mistakes meant humiliation, in religions where desire was a sin. Imagine that, when desire is a sin. In cultures where success is a passport to love. It sneaks into language. What is wrong with you? You should be ashamed of yourself. You're too sensitive. You're just attention seeking. It's even reading them out. Like it's scary stuff. It's scary shit to have to experience that or to experience it. Sometimes it doesn't even need words. A look can burn it in. A laugh at the wrong moment. A lack of arms when we need them. A lack of a hug. A lack of comfort when we need it. And for many, food becomes the battlefield. Food, sex, money, control, body image, it can all be the battlefield. Anything can be the battlefield. But here's the truth. From my point of view, shame is the soul's lockdown drill, hiding behind a bookshelf, waiting for love to come looking. So what are the many faces of shame? Shame wears costumes. It's the overachiever, the people pleaser, the angry one, the lone wolf, the martyr, the ghost. Sometimes shame is funny. Like how ridiculous is it that we walk around pretending we're not human, pretending we don't make mistakes? Like, it's ridiculous when you think of it. A fart. Like, We're afraid to fart. You know, it's one of the biggest things in relationships. How long were we together before we farted in front of each other? You know, things like that. We crying at an advert on the TV, which is, it could be anything. What we would see every day, but we see it on the TV and it sets something off. We make typos in texts. When you're walking down the street and someone says hello and you say, "I'm grand, thanks." You keep walking and you say to yourself, "Did I just say that?" You know, a lot of people feel shame even in those things. That's not shame worthy. That's soul worthy. But still we hide. If they really knew me, if I tell the truth, I'll lose everything. I should have healed by now. Should. It's one of shame's favourite weapons. So I'll share something with you that I've learned over the years. There is no should in the heart's language. There's only ache and hope. I'll say that again. There is no should. The word should is not in the heart's language. There's only ache and hope and love in the heart's language. What part of you have you kept hidden out of fear? It's unlovable. That's a question just to consider whenever you have a few minutes alone. What part of you have you kept hidden out of fear? It's unlovable. Keep that in mind. We don't kill shame. We compassion it. We see it. We speak it. The healing of shame requires others. Witnessing, soft eyes, brave listening, safe enough places. Sometimes a therapist, sometimes it's a dog, sometimes it's a friend at 3 a.m. who says, "Yeah, me too, I hear you." So I'm going to say, I suppose, I don't know if this is radical, but shame dies in daylight. Not when we shout out, but when someone says, "You are still lovable." Or when someone says, "I believe you." How do we heal, or what does healing from shame look like? When you can say, "I don't know." It doesn't matter about whatever it is. If you can say, "I don't know," to whatever question you're asked, or to where someone asks you about a decision you're going to make. If you can say, "I don't know," without even flinching, that's a good start. Resting without feeling you have to earn it. Admitting you're sacred and you're not apologising for that. Admitting you're going to take care of yourself and not going to apologise for it. Laughing about the things you once cried over. For me, that's a quite a big thing to be able to do, particularly in therapy where it might feel a bit safer than anywhere else, to be able to laugh over some of these things, some of the causes of shame, some things where you may have said, "Jesus, I couldn't possibly laugh at that." Being able to laugh about it, laugh about the thing you once cried over. The other thing is showing up. Not to impress, but to be real. Why can't you just be real and not feel shame about it? So let me tell you about someone who used to come to me years ago and he used to carry shame like a second spine. He believed his weight was, a moral failure. For want of a better way of putting it, if I'd have to look through my notes, but I think they're his words. He thought that if he ate in public, people saw his shame. He got smaller and smaller and smaller, but the shame didn't leave. It just changed shape. So no matter what we do because of shame, it won't leave until we address it. It'll change how it looks. on one day he just dropped his fork where in a restaurant or a cafe, wherever he was eating, and a stranger smiled and handed it back. He didn't shrink away. He laughed and took the fork without even thinking. And that cracked something open for him. It didn't heal him straight away, but that was the beginning of it. Sometimes healing starts not with a roar, but with a dropped fork. Now here's something weird. Shame in its raw form might actually be sacred. It shows we care. It shows we long to belong. It reveals our deepest wounds, which are also where our deepest love can grow. James Hillman might invite us not to solve shame, but to soul it, to let it speak, to see what God or story is living underneath. In Irish myth, the idea of Anamela, the other soul, we carry, waiting to be returned to us through love, poetry, time. Maybe shame guards that soul. Maybe it's just afraid that we'll misuse it again. Maybe we need to say, "You're protected. You've protected me long enough. I'm ready now. Let me meet the part of me you're hiding." The nature of shame. I'm just sort of trying to go through other ways of describing it. See, does it resonate with anyone? Shame is the voice of eternal, internal exile. I think I mentioned that a few minutes ago. It convinces us we are unworthy of belonging. Undeserving of connection. It festers in silence. It thrives in secrecy, and it grows stronger the more we hide it. Guilt might urge us toward repair. Shame tells us to disappear. Disappear yourself. Fade into the scenery. Let no one see you. At its core, shame disconnects from others. But most dangerously, it disconnects us from ourselves. It splits the soul, turning parts of us into enemies. The body, as I said before, the desire, the wound, the need. Shame targets every place that we most need, and every place that mostly needs compassion. Shame, silence. I know I might be going through this over and over again, but these things have to be said. These are so important. Shame damages because it silences our voice. It teaches us to keep quiet, to censor ourselves. We have to constantly think about what we're going to say before we say it. And then when we say it, we're doubting it. We doubt our right to speak, our doubt to dream. And I'm not talking about sleeping dreams, I'm talking about dreams. Dare we dream to do well in life? Or dream to do what we want? Or dream just to express ourselves? A person steeped in shame will sabotage opportunities before they even try. Who do you think you are becomes the kind of inner curse. Shame hijacks the nervous system. Shame can mimic trauma responses, freeze, collapse, fawn. The body coils and twists inwards as if to disappear. It pollutes relationships. Shame often becomes a contagion. I feel if I'm unlovable, I may lash out. Control, hide, reject. Reject love before it gets a chance to reach me. It feeds the inner critic. The shame-bound psyche often develops an internal prosecutor. Not to be cruel, but in some twisted hope of keeping the person in line, in inverted commas, enough to be safe or acceptable. From a soul's perspective, I suppose shame, it could be an archetypal wound rooted not only in personal experience, but in a deeper cultural and mythic forgetting. I'd ask, not how to heal shame, but how to dialogue with it. What our inner spirit or diamond is speaking. What is it speaking through shame? What's it trying to tell us? Is it a wounded child? The archetype of the wounded child. The silenced artist. The unloved lover. The unloved child. James Hillman might warn against rushing to fix or erase shame. Instead, he'd invite a descent, a soulful inquiry into what our shame is protecting. What beauty is once loved and lost? Fantastic work for therapy. Those two questions, you know, what is our shame protecting? And what beauty it once loved and lost? Can we look at shame as a doorway? Strangely, shame can be a threshold. When held with presence and care, especially in a therapeutic or sacred container, shame becomes a map. It can become a map, a roadway out of where we are. It points to the exact places where healing is most needed. It can become a guide to lost creativity, to hidden tenderness, unmet grief, to the longing for inclusion, for wholeness, or for love. So, to close this, it's important to remind you, you are not the worst thing you've done. You are not the story your shame tells the night. You are not broken. You are breaking open. I'll say that again. You are not broken. You are breaking open. As always, I'll leave you with a reflection. I suppose beneath every shame is a part of you still waiting to be loved by the one person who matters most, and that's yourself. Until you can learn to love yourself, you know, that's it. So come home to yourself. There's a banquet of love waiting, for want of a better way of putting it. You don't have to earn it, you just have to show up. And that's it. I don't know how long that was, and I hope I didn't bore you. It's a wordy subject, and it's a subject I could go on and on about. But I hope this hit somewhere, or hit home somewhere. Have I anything else? I've nothing else. I'm going to be doing an open day, hopefully coming into the autumn, in the Egan Centre in Bray. I'll let you know more about that, and it'll be on the Facebook page, Tending the Soul and Spirit. But for now, thanks for listening. I can get a transcript of this if anyone wants to read it. You can email me at thespiritsjanitor@gmail.com and I can email it to you, or get in touch through Facebook. Okay, thanks a million.